Chapter 54. Amanda. The voicemail from Pharaoh made her want to throw up. She listened as she watched him pull away in his car. He might come back. In fact, it was a certainty.
Hi, Amanda, it's Detective Pharaoh. I called at your place late last night and again this morning. You didn't answer the comm. We have to talk, urgently. You can get me on this number. We need you to come into the precinct. Call me back.
The tone was formal, not the same cop who'd held her while she wept and whose heart had been broken by the loss of her family. Pharaoh had looked out for her, stayed in touch, kept her out of jail when she should have been arrested outside Crone's building, made sure she went to group therapy and didn't violate her parole. This didn't sound friendly anymore. She watched Pharaoh pull away in his car, but the relief didn't last long. She left the laundromat, went round the side of the building to the line of dumpsters, lifted the lid on one that looked almost full, and dumped the bag of clothes. Her knee was beginning to bark again when she got back into her apartment, pleased and relieved that he hadn't hammered down her door. Don't cops need a warrant for that? Maybe that's where Pharaoh was headed. He might be on his way to get a warrant, and then he would be back. She packed a few things in a bag, her laptop, the money, some clothes, Sparkles the unicorn, and Luisa's wedding ring. She couldn't leave those behind, not ever. As she went into the bathroom to grab her toothbrush and personal items, she froze, her hands full, listening. She thought she'd heard someone knocking. She quickly stuffed everything she needed into her gym bag, zipped it up, and then, knock, knock. Jesus, he couldn't have come back so soon, she thought. If he went to get a warrant, then there was no way he could have made it back that fast. Knock, knock. And this time, the knocking came with a voice.
Amanda White?
She moved quietly to the front door. It was closed, but not bolted or locked. She carefully raised her eye to the peephole in the center of the door. On the other side stood a man in a pale brown suit, white shirt, yellow tie. Small, squat, balding, and a shoulder bag on his arm. A man in his late 50s, maybe. The skirt of hair that remained round the crown of his skull was almost completely gray, with only a few dark streaks here and there. His shirt buttons strained at his small, round belly. A cop, a detective. They had come to arrest her. The man's eye level rose, and a knowing smile curled his jelly cheeks.
I know you're in there. I can see you blocking the light in the peephole. You need to open the door. There's no way around this, Miss White.
She ducked instinctively. It felt as if he was able to see through the peephole, as if he was looking her right in the eye. Knock, knock.
Come on, let's not make a scene for the neighbors. Open up, he said.
She swore. It was too late. She'd run out of time. With no Naomi, she would have to face the charges alone, and she would suffer for what she had done to Quinn. Her shoulders slumped, and she reached out for the door lock. She turned it, opening the door. The man still wore that sickly smile as he spoke.
Amanda White?
She nodded, her stomach tightening, bile in her throat. He reached behind his back. Handcuffs, she thought. Amanda held out her hands, closed her eyes. She awaited the sensation of cold steel snapping round her wrists. She had failed, and it was time to face up to what she had done. She felt something in her hands, paper, no handcuffs. She opened her eyes, a brown letter-sized envelope in her grip.
You've been served, lady,
said the man, before turning towards the elevator. Every ounce of breath left Amanda's body. It was almost as if she'd been tensing herself in preparation for a physical blow. Her shoulders fell, the ache in her jaw subsided, her body uncoiled. She stepped back into her apartment, shut the door, and tore open the envelope. It was Crone's lawsuit. His lawyers had filed it in court. Amanda had not answered any of their letters. They were now taking her to court for damages. They'd waited until Thanksgiving morning to serve the papers, knowing that it would be especially upsetting to get them today. She almost laughed. Amanda threw the papers on the floor, picked up her bag, and shut the apartment door behind her. She thought she would never see the place again. All her memories were now behind a closed door. Soon, Her life would be spent behind a steel door in a prison cell. Part of Amanda accepted that fate, but she would be damned if she would be spending that time alone. She went back out on the street, made sure Pharaoh's vehicle wasn't around, just in case he'd made a loop of the block. It would be unwise to use her cell phone to make the next call. No point in making a road map for the cops. Instead, she found a payphone across the street and used it to call Billy.
Hey, I know you were going to call me when you had something, but I need to see you. Whatever we're doing to find Ruth, we have to do it faster. I think the cops are looking for me. I'm leaving my apartment. I can't stay here.
No, oh God. Amanda, I'm so sorry. Look, let me know where you are and I'll come pick you up.
I need a place to stay, she said.
You can stay with me, it's fine. I'm just emailing my PI back. A lot has happened this morning, good and bad,
said Billy.
My PI contacted me to say there is nothing anywhere on Ruth Geltman.
What do you mean?
I mean, she doesn't have a bank account, she doesn't have a credit card, there's no record of a current address. She's not registered with the usual utilities. No record of a cell phone in her name.
Jesus Christ, I thought we were getting somewhere, said Amanda.
She's using fake identities, so she can't be tracked. She dumps one ID, then uses another. Unless we know which ID she's using right now, there's no way to find her.
Amanda bit down hard, grinding her teeth.
But I think there's someone who might be able to help us find her,
said Billy.
Who?
I've been talking to Dr. Marin at Kirby Psychiatric Center. He was the one who treated Ruth when she was inside. I told him I'd met Ruth, and I believed she was experiencing hallucinations, delusions, and accusing men of being her attacker.
Smart, thought Amanda.
What did he say?
He wants to evaluate her, and if she's become a danger to herself or others, he can take her back into hospital. So at least we know what to do when we find her. But more than that, Marin is helping set up a visit with someone tomorrow, someone who might know how Ruth got those fake identities.
Who is it? And why can't we talk to him today?
He's in prison. Marin is going to help smooth things to get an urgent visit, but it can't be today. It'll have to be tomorrow. The man we need to talk to is Scott Gelman, Ruth's husband.